Stuttering crickets. That's right. Temperatures just dropped below 50 at night. I think the bees are going to be going to bed. I didn't get many this week, this year. Yeah, I didn't get any, actually. They kind of robbed us. So, intermittent crickets. That's right, Grimner. A little bit more to connect up here as we start up now. Making sure and missed a mark. But anyway, moving on to this year. Folks, I don't know. I've never seen it before in my life. And we're going to talk about food here, or breaking in, and then we're going to move on to the normal nonsense. But I've never seen it. I just got invaded by demon turkey horde. Just scratched the heck out of the garden. I've never seen that. So, more and more stuff attacking the food system, I suppose. And as we start getting into fall, I hope you're producing a lot and putting food away. I think that's going to be something to consider. The alternative of provide for yourself as you can, as the alternatives that are supplied are going to be going up in price. And so as we are trying to get people behind the woodshed, trying to get people to not be the crickets, interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 436. And I always have a hesitation when I say those numbers. It's like knowledge has to come. And thank you to the commenters on BitChute and Mines. And I appreciate your support and your acknowledgement. And I try my best here to give you all the best information to prepare you to respond to what's coming and be aware, maybe in ways you hadn't thought about before. And thank you for the picture you created, just in case, behind the woodshed at Mines, over last week's statement, and appreciate the support. Getting over to the food, I hope you're preparing. I heard this year, I don't know if it was just plums and some other fruits, they just overproduced this year. Maybe it'd be a good thing to look around. You might find some plums to store, can, or whatever. Again, prices going up where we can, trying to can about as much as possible. I noticed this year the squirrels are just going nuts. I've never seen so many squirrels. Again, 2 years ago, I don't think we had many at all. Now they're dropping, it's like rains pine cone parts out of the trees now, just littering everything. So, don't know if that's a foreboding of what's coming in this winter. But at least the political realm is predicted to bring austerity, predicted to cause the problems that we are seeing. The COVID helped to aid that, interrupting supply lines. We, right on cue, the government comes in and subsidizes farmers to not grow food. That was what, last spring we were hearing about that. Well, now plunging crop supplies and prices soaring and reignite food inflation fears. Well, stop being fearful. This is all markets moving back and forth on this. And they're telling us exactly the plan that they had to take away our food is now at least being reported to us. And so if you keep relying solely on other places for your food and outside of your locale, and you're not connecting up with local farmers and things, we might be seeing at least the increase in prices and then the decrease in supplies. U.S. Department of Agriculture's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, always estimates, report was released on Thursday afternoon and pointed to a declining grain supplies that sent grain futures prices higher and will keep food inflation in focus. The closely watched supply and demand reported slashed estimates on corn yields and stockpiles. Part of me says that's okay because a lot of it's just GMO. But anyway, we have also grain and oilseed futures soared. So there's a market response. It was all told to us it was going to happen. And this is the only thing I can see is starving you out. Russia's in a little bit of it in here. As you see, I think this is the story that explains Russia really controls the wheat. They just grow wheat like we grow corn and soy. The United States grows corn and soy. And so the price is going up on the wheat. And apparently there's a control there. But again, every country for itself in the economic exploitation of the people and their needs, it seems. And so, just wanted to remind us as we're moving into the, this happened to coincide this week, our temperatures overnight went down and to the point where the plants are now responding, and then the turkey horde attacks the garden, as if not to compile everything else that happened this year. Then I also want to move on here quickly just to touch base. I said here weeks ago, never got to, lots of stuff I can't get to anymore in the time I want to talk about it. Too much going on now, but I wondered how Governor Cuomo was lasting in the office. Well, it wasn't the next week. Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul, to become New York's first female governor after Cuomo's humiliating resignation. And he's come out to try and deny whatever. I don't even get behind it. This guy really, relative to the COVID response, he was an implementer of it. He was no good for any of it, and we're finding over and over what I've said behind the woodshed is coming true. This is a setup. I don't know how many words we can use to describe the. It's a global fraud. There's a lot of people making money. I don't know where some of these people are going to get where they get their payment for doing what they've done. Maybe they're just rotten people to cause death to others and suffering to people. Maybe they're just that abused in themselves to allow it onto others. But there was, again, no way you couldn't go into this so-called COVID-19 pandemic without seeing it was a fraud, without seeing it came from that the influenza, the 2 or 3 year prior very high influenza season death rates were being used, that momentum was being used in this thing to mistreat people. And then come out and you show how they lock the door against telling you anything other than the narrative. I thought would have had people really up in arms, literally, and doing what they needed to do. I offered what could be done to, if you will, justify the action because you're up against the presumption of rightness in the governments. I told you that the example for that would have been what happened in Virginia. It was like, step by step, giving us instruction as we were going to come into this time, this is now a year ago, a year and a half ago, that we didn't respond. And so I was amazed that Cuomo even stuck around, but now they're going to, fortify the other thing. It's not derogation to women at all, but this is the promotion. The first, I didn't understand why this was even an issue, if she's the first governor, why is that an issue if there's no, if we have no importance, gender-wise, what's this importance? It's because it's all a promotion. She's partly in on it, too. She actually says, I agree with him resigning. So they all have their, again, this is just a political promotion, no different than I see any of the changes and modernizations. These are all political attacks. He didn't last a week after I asked, why, how is he still in office? But not the way I was thinking. He goes through, again, the sordid details that go through, which he denies, and relative to sexual harassment, yeah. To me, it's just the ongoing way you attack people. Maybe that was good enough, but I don't know that this female governor is going to do any worse, as we're going to hear some stories. The females in the world were not a better world. In fact, they tried to make a non-distinct difference. They put people in legal. Person is neutral, it has no gender, and yet they made an issue legally in gender. Should have been another clue. So, but again, all these things, I see a ton of more stuff in here inside these news stories. As I said, they're noticed to us if we had the eyes to see. I only have the eyes I have to see. That's why I was hoping more people would come forward to mutually help and aid each other. Because when I'm having to look in one direction, maybe someone else can be looking in a different direction, and together we can communicate what we find and we have a better, more comprehensive view. That hasn't happened. I'm a bit disappointed, and that just shows the difficulty our society is going to have, as I predicted, coming out of 1999. And to that now we move into what I've been talking about, attempting to use this fraud, this global so-called COVID-19 pandemic fraud, as a foundation from which we can see and deal with corruptions. As I've said, if you can deal with the worst corruptions, you deal with the worst thing instead of trying to think it's going to go away. Deal with the worst thing. All lesser things will be dealt with. Or at least they're not going to be as hard to deal with because you've prepared. It's like exercising. built up yourself and prepared yourself to deal with the worst. If it doesn't hit, then it's just, you're kind of streaming along pretty good. When it does hit, you aren't surprised. And I equate that over to flying. When you learn how to fly, they go through endless amounts of boring, what seems boring at the time, practices, practice, 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 redoing these maneuvers. And, you know, you don't think about it. You think it's boring until one of those things happens. And all of a sudden, you're going into autopilot, literally. You go into autopilot. You save yourself, essentially, unless it's a catastrophe. And even so, you still are doing stuff to mitigate the harm. You are prepared and you started acting long before your mind started to think about responding. And this is kind of what I was hoping I could do for people. So I've been asked here this week, and there may be a bunch of new listeners here just on a word back on needing help. And I'm going to have to say up front, I haven't had the chance and the time, and because it's jurisdiction by jurisdiction on two fronts, I haven't had the time to study relative to employment. But apparently a lot, like I said, I told you every, a lot of people in employment are going to be looking at this problem relative to the fraud and relative to being imposed upon by third parties, employers, businesses that you might go to. I went through all that about businesses and addressing the accommodation that has to go on. And it all boiled down really to the same thing. Are you a risk? Have you been determined to be a risk? Or are you a risk? And this kind of keeps moving through. The court, I responded to a court case that the judge said the exact same thing, reduced everything I was saying in steps from the communicable disease statutes that you will need to know to show how you have been deprived due process when they infringe upon you, which now also kind of touches on something that I was, another link going on with that professor who's advanced and got his own waiver. There's still an outlying question, which, if I can be so bold to say that, had they not agreed to SARS-CoV-2 being a thing, they would not have that question and that problem. What I've been suggesting eliminates those questions in his case for anybody else moving forward. And this now touches to employment. But I haven't done any studies directly on employment from state to state. It's just too much work. Every state handles things different. That's why it's state by state, case by case. Why I've said wherever you live or where you are about living, you go look at the communicable disease statutes that were the legislature was saying was due process for you. Now, I was asked a month. I thought I was only 2 or 3 weeks behind folks before. I was actually a month behind, and that was triggered by a problem that I'm going to use today in order to guide some people who may be listening to where to start to become knowledgeable of what the record they need to be making and the letters that they would write. We're going to go through this one more time, but based on something that happened to me. In part, it was a study. I was asked in one state called Idaho to go find, they could, the people could, someone couldn't find their statutes. No, not a condemnation, but this is a real serious problem. We can't find our own statutes. Just consider how far behind you are when that's what you have to use. You can't find them. You haven't likely read them either. So, but this case, I went and I looked, and then when I looked, I don't know what it was, I couldn't quickly find the statutes for Idaho. It was really kind of impressive. But I was pressed to do other things, and so I spent so much time, a certain amount of time, I wasn't finding what I wanted to find for the commenter, the requester of it. And I won't respond to that until I get some answer. I don't just talk to be talking, and I don't offer things, just anything. It's specific to the request, and to, again, put you on the trailhead of the path that it sounds like your intention wants and needs. So I couldn't find any. I looked, and I said, okay, well, here's a problem. I'm telling people to go look at statutes in their state, and you plug in some words, and it doesn't come up. Now, if it doesn't come up, you're going to have a little bit of trouble if you're, like most people, don't understand that it's there and you need to use it. And so I want to use this as an object lesson. If there's those people listening in now that are having potential employment conditions, you have a two-step condition that you have to meet. One's relevant to your employment, your employment contract, your rights thereby. But moving into the communicable disease side, you have the understand what was expected of the officials and whether or not they complied and whether or not you were assumed or presumed into that wrongfully, or whether or not there is no record for you. And that's really the more important thing when I was suggesting subsequent to the court saying so as well, refine to two questions. Go write to your local health administrator and get the letter based on 2 points. you know, I'll tell those right now before, without getting too more deep. It's whether or not you have had a medical report issued to you about you that you may or may not know about. And was there an assessment? I'll use the word assessment. That's the Kanukistinian word, and I prefer that actually, because the other word, determination, that you find in most of the states, United States states, that is a determination. That word, determination, has been essentially condemned to judgment against judicial scrutiny. So the word assessment works better in after investigation. What you see, all these, I'm not using these words more than just to recall what I've read in statutes. These words become pretty determinant of what you have to say. That's why you have to go read it. So you have the letter that you want to know whether or not a medical report was done. Why? Because that's the first step. That's a professional, a medical professional was supposed to issue a report. You need to know whether or not a report has been issued on you. Then you need to know what the assessment was from that report. And then thirdly, I guess, is the extension of that, which is what the judge did in that one case. I think it was in Philadelphia, said, the result of those two, or the three steps, or four steps, whatever's in your state, is, are you a risk? Have you been determined to be a risk? And so you want that evidence in your pocket. When you have to have that evidence in your pocket, if you will, in your bag of law evidence that you have for defending yourself, you have to have that so that you can rebut any idea in anyone, whether third party or government, that you are somehow subject to the jurisdiction and authority that they want to impose a mitigation measure. So, getting back to Idaho, a month ago, a little bit over now, I looked for the statutes. I really couldn't find them. After 20, 30 minutes, I wasn't finding, I could find things, but it wasn't what I was looking for. Well, somehow, here just a week ago, I got another, had a little bit of mind, all of a sudden it flashed in my mind, go look again. And I hadn't responded to the email. It was over a month old. And I looked and I put in a term. And you'll get the links to this. You see how it might take a little bit here. And it took me two times to get what I was looking for, what I couldn't find the first time. Idaho communicable disease and quarantine were the four terms I used. I looked at that return. You'll see this. I hope you'll get the same return I did. And it doesn't show anything in the statute for Idaho, just like it didn't show before. And so I sort of rolled my eyes a little bit to myself and said, okay, how am I going to find these statutes? They're usually not this difficult to track down. And I don't know, I'm not making any statements about why it's so difficult. It just was not coming up for me. It didn't come up for the gentleman that was searching for his cell. But what did come up in this first, and I look through things and I'm looking for information. So even though it didn't come up what I was looking for, I did run across with something you might be interested to see. Somebody purports in one of the links, if you get to it, to be a university that has a protocol that they're going to utilize. And in this protocol, they have a couple of interesting statements, which I think are important, because they focus the fact on the university system understands that they've looked at some of this themselves, and they have a guideline, and they're going to follow the extension of the authorities and the limits of the authorities. And in the first two paragraphs, they pretty much lay it out, and they also use the word epidemiologic evidence. And we found out last week, and this is something you got to take note of, epidemiologic evidence is not evidence at all, it's data. And I say it's not evidence at all because the data is part of the smart process of gathering the data you need to prove your outcome. It's smart, S-M-A-R-T. It's not necessarily truth, and it's statistics. It's not actual infectious agents, which is what the law focuses on. And so we use these epidemiologic surveys or data results, and that is off point. And when you let them use them, you're off point of what the law requires. And so it's important to keep track of how this is working. Why? It's not just that you write the two questions or three questions or five questions. Remember, this started out by, we wrote down five steps in one state that were required that we found out didn't exist. The results of the steps didn't get done. They were acting without the predicate acts that gave them the authority they were claiming discretion over. And I don't know about you, but it seems highly questionable if it's not definitive and self-evident you can't have discretion over something until you've done the predicate acts to gain the power of the discretion. In other words, what are we talking about here? This is all about whether this is the communicable disease statutes or a general emergency declared by the governor. There has to be, and now we're going to make the statement here, there has to be, in either case, the demonstration of a non-fraudulent exigency for either a general emergency or the communicable disease. Epidemiological data does not do that. Identifying an infectious agent does do that. Then we found out way early on, as I told you, that it was in the CDC paperwork, there is no test. They can't do this. So everything, I want you to understand this too, because this ends up going with this document, I'm going to here just read the two paragraphs, leads us into federal law that claims, if you look at it, it claims that the federal law has power, like what you see Biden doing generally, to mandate certain things. But you also have to look between the, you know how to read the words and find out, well, that's actually local. The power is local. So your due process is what you're doing, because the reference in the word for the federal is reasonable. And there's nothing can come from nothing reasonable comes from fraud. So this is consistent. And when you keep looking through my eyes, the way this is, and then get behind the woodshed with how the law was supposed to implement and show where officials did nothing consistent with objective law, the black and white. Now you're making a record, and that record takes a bit to do. And my other problem with this record-making thing is it all depends on what any individual's intention is and what your capacity. I have another problem that I haven't been able to answer. The government's answering in these oddball ways, like we need a release for your own information. That's either didn't understand the question, and this is, I think I'm going to respond this way when I do respond to the email. A letter like that either doesn't understand your demand for evidence, or it's a obstructive tactic. And this becomes the problem. What are you capable of doing? Because you have to go after the obstructive angle, the worst. And that answer, if they went there, that means you're likely having to go to something like the courts, which you may or may not be able to swing on your own. And so this is everything you see there's a result, which may or may not be something you can handle. So when I'm answering emails and I'm listening to what people ask of me, the analysis is very difficult at some point. And then to find out, most people really haven't read most of the required black and white that's required. They don't even know the steps. It made the two-question letter much easier to assert and start the process of learning how to make the record so that you can use that record that exposes the failure of the government to provide you the due process the legislature required, to turn around and put that against anybody who's trying to impose you with having to get a mandatory vaccination. But you have to go to your employment for that. You have to go to your employment rules and your whatever is pertinent, that employment contracting type stuff. You have to go read for the words inside there that you will use in order to give you, if you will, the standing to assert against the employer. There are certain things they'll say they can done. In fact, like you'll see here, the DOJ will come out and say, well, there's nothing in federal law that stops an employer from imposing mandatory vaccines. Well, in the United States, there's two jurisdictions. And the federal law is not actually leading. It's not the prior prevailing authority. So the federal attorney general didn't answer to the state's authority, did he? And yet we can find in other documents that the state's authority does prevail, even though this document I'm going to get to here now, these two paragraphs, explains the basic thing that you can anticipate is going on and how to respond, shows us a federal law that's supposed to be prevailing, and it's actually not. And so the DOJ lies by omission, by not telling you the state law is where you get your due process, by which the federal authority for Biden and the CDC can reasonably do. And that reasonableness thing is a whole due process question. Was it done or not? And by what standard is dictated by the state? And so they have to come by, they'll say that, oh, that where the state doesn't come in conflict the state law is good until it comes in conflict with this law. This law at the federal level can't destroy your due process. And so we're actually back. The reading between the lines is, as we saw in the IHR 2005 International Health Regulations document, the United States government stating that it had to reserve a right against implementation in favor of the state's rights. So all this is in law supportable. You're going to have to put that together. Not that you argue it, that you just list it as the authorities to be able to push off the authority of the foreign CDC and push it back into the local character. And I'm kind of going beyond people who have never heard this before if you're listening for the first time. What we're talking about is your communicable disease statutes. What I started to lead into was, how do you find your statutes? And I had to do it myself twice. I didn't find the one for somebody else. And we got to Idaho. I got to this document. The first one was not what I was looking for, but I did see this document. And it's a statement of principle of the U of I Infectious Disease Response Protocol. Two paragraphs say, control of communicable diseases is not an exact science, and each outbreak presents a unique set of challenges. Now, that was an immense opening statement. Not only do you have the term communicable disease, not just disease like COVID-19, but an infectious agent that causes these symptoms, but they agree that an outbreak presents a unique set of challenges. What's the first thing that's in the law? Not the pandemic, not the epidemic, but the outbreak. And so you start to read, when you start reading your own statutes, you'll see that there's a chronological condition that goes on that must be met by your local officials. And this is the problem of the employment disconnect. Most likely what you'll be able to see if you read well close enough, but what employers will have to follow as well. In other words, they're imposing upon you anything that's reasonable where you have not been determined to be a risk to their company or the public they serve. Next sentence, epidemiologic evidence is often incomplete and uncertain. Epidemiological evidence is only what the CDC applies. We read that right from the CDC website last week. And I told you that's data, that's big data. That's just cooking the books. It's the best science. It's not science at all. Best science is BS. So they acknowledge that the epidemiologic evidence the CDC would provide is incomplete and uncertain. And so this should get you really quickly, when we finally get to any of your state statutes, there's not an idea that you're stopping. You're not preventing a concept. You're not even preventing the symptoms. You're required to identify the principle that's causing the communicable symptoms, the infectious agent. And where there's no record that you have it, or you're a carrier of it, or you can even be a carrier of it, as we see asserted by that professor, where his natural immunity he steps up with. Now we're starting to see that there's a reality that has to be done. Epidemiologic evidence cannot meet that state law. And so they say that right here in the second sentence of this opening paragraph and statement from the university for their protocol in dealing. And this is dated in 1999, right before this fraud that comes upon the world. Going on, variations in the environment. Listen to all these things here, folks. These are all the things that are obligations of the government to perfect in you if they want to make you do anything, actually. When you go look at the rules and they follow, I'm not going to say verbatim follow the statutes. You'll never see the statute stated here until you get to the near the end. They refer to federal law. They say, they explain to you what all this stuff, this investigation is supposed to do to become determinant by the public health official. Variations in environment, season, individual susceptibility, specific pathogen. Can I say that again? Specific pathogen and numerous other factors require that authoritative medical resources list risks as ranges of probability rather than absolute limits. And there's your cook in the books. This is risk management. This is not that statement. Finding all those things that they're supposed to find has actually reduced down to simply just statistics in risk management. Yet the state law requires you find a real infectious agent. the simple answer to this is if you're going to have this so-called, the crime here, you have a treatment that you're going to give, it's not supposed to be causing the infection. And it seems the man-made cause of this infection would be, I'm going to say it again, Vince, easily eliminated if you just arrest everybody that's creating the contagion in the form and the under color of what's called a vaccine. It's a man-made synthetic thing they're injecting into people to spread it around. They're going on here. And they're only dealing, cooking with the books on risk management. This is, I've told you this before, this is identical to how they do fire management. And how we defeated that was to show the local authority prevails against federal policy, and the local authority has the requirement to find real stuff and to stop man-made interference. And what we did with the fire was we stopped the so-called prescribed burns during summertime. I know! Insane, isn't it? You suppress the real thing, you stop letting them do risk management statistics. And until the arsons came out 2 years later, and predictably so, we had clear air in summertime because we stopped having them do prescribed burns. Same thing here. It's the same application. The conflagration is this thing they're injecting in people. But moving on here to the next paragraph. Nevertheless, looking past all that, and when faced with an actual outbreak, see the hesitation and you see the setup in all of this here, folks. Just in these first two paragraphs that were not my target, and I'm telling you this because this was not my target when I was doing the study, but amplified some things that I'm going to bring for the first time today before I get to where we were going. And I'm going through this maybe painfully slow, and maybe because you haven't read the statutes, maybe a little bit disjointed, to show you how this process of understanding and learning is. It's not maybe so straightforward. And yes, I'm coming with a little bit of knowledge, but I'm here to tell you how you look. These two paragraphs I'm going to read when I finish give you what you're going to read when you get to the statutes. And the things that they have disregarded, they're either doing, which is best science and statistical cooking the books, and they're not doing the actual thing. The second paragraph says, nevertheless, despite this epidemiological evidence that's uncertain, there might be an actual outbreak. That's kind of what I said about the needle in the haystack of this COVID noise. Way back in February or January of last year. Nevertheless, an actual outbreak. The first step, outbreak, not epidemic or pandemic, but outbreak. Local authorities may be required to use absolute limits to determine when they institute isolation, quarantine, vaccination, and other methods of infection control to protect the public health and safety. That's a loaded word, public. They don't mean yours, they mean theirs. That's why when the hospitals get overwhelmed, it sets the alarms. That's why they want to keep the hospitals surging with a bunch of nonsense numbers so that they keep the public interest at peak beyond your needs. But we have, before they say, but it was absolute limits to determine when to institute isolation, quarantine, vaccination, and other methods of infection control. How does that happen? That's only dictated by your communicable disease statute in a state. Goes on, last sentence before I go on. There's more to read here. I'm just going to jump to the federal law when I get there. They must always balance the implementation of such limits with an awareness of the public's right to liberty. When you were locked down without being declared from a medical report to be the infectious principal for a contagion they isolated, not the symptoms of something, but the actual infectious agent, when they locked you down with all that, did they care about your public rights of liberty that this university said that they would care? And so they're going on. You can read, there's tons of stuff to see in this document. Again, not even my target, not even what I'm after. I'm trying to find an answer for someone who's asked me, where's my state statutes? But in this document, they reference a code, a United States Municipal Code, 42 U.S.C. Section 264. You know I mentioned 42 U.S.C. Section 1981 is your civil rights, that exactions of every kind you get to pay and no other. That's your civil rights, folks, underneath this same municipal section. But they have a regulation to control communicable diseases. And they'll tell you some things of the federal government. And they'll tell you here how this thing is supposed to work out. And this go to be apprehension, detention, and conditional release of individuals. Conditional release was kind of interesting in this title here. Did they conditionally release you at any point? Were you someone subject to the regulation? Well, let's see what happens. Regulations prescribed under this section shall not provide for apprehension. What? Shall not provide for apprehension. Remember, these work in opposite of what you think they're talking about, just like Title 50. They go to the exception. Shall not do this unless. Shall not do this except. And that except is what you're going to find the official committing the fraud, by fraud she does, by bringing, I told you during the talk with Rand Paul, two of the issues that made that what he's doing lawful under Title 50, where it is a dual-use statement for the public good, not just a military bioweapon. I told you he had to say that in order to justify what he was doing underneath Title 50. So Title 50 talks just like this. Regulations prescribed under this section shall not provide for apprehension, detention, and conditional release of individuals except for the purpose of preventing the introduction. Listen carefully here, folks. The introduction, transmission, or spread of such is the word. I said specific. This is the point that you can't miss, that one little word. Such communicable diseases as may be specified from time to time in executive orders of the president under the recommendation of the secretary in a consultation with the surgeon general. Do not miss the word communicable there. This is not just disease or what they term COVID-19. There has to be an infectious agent. And so if you don't have an infectious agent or they can't test for one, there is nothing under this federal statute that they can apply that's reasonable, because you're going to find that's the standard. And this is saying that nothing can happen. You're not supposed to be apprehended, limited, locked down, or anything unless they can do this. And so the federal authority, going on to this one, and this is interesting to me, this statute, 42 U.S.C. 264, as mentioned in the prior university document, didn't mention any of their state laws, just mentioned the federal authority, which I found fascinating as well. You just show, just watch how what the real authority is working that's counter to what your local state laws are actually to be doing. It refers to the other section, another section of Title 42, at 266, special quarantine powers in time of war. Special quarantine powers in time of war. And so you need to go read into this, because this is what really lightens me up, because this is exactly what they've done. You're in a time of war. You're in multiple wars. The war on drugs is one of them. You don't think they're connected. All they need is a wartime thing. You can also read here, it's very specific to the naval military forces and the threat to those. That was interesting to me, because they used those at warp speed to come and get after you, didn't they? The National Guard comes after you. They're coming to you. And so one of the ideas here was stop sending your soldiers around to people, and maybe you'll stop threatening, making them the contagion by that act. Maybe you're the self-inflicted wound. Maybe stop sending the military into the areas that you're jabbing people, and so you can get rid of the problem. You're causing the problem, as I've been telling you they do. The self-inflicted wound. So, reading this section, they tell you what it's all about in relative to the war, and that they are not, the executive can make orders, but it's relative to very specific things. So you have to show, when you can show that you're not the contagion, you're not the infectious principal, and you get a letter, you also answer this. Even if, as they say later in the prior statute, even if that their laws of preemption, it says here nothing in this section or section 266 of the title of the regulations promulgated under this section may be construed as superseding any provision under state law, including regulations and including provisions established by political subdivisions of the state, comma, except to the extent that such a provision conflicts with the exercise of federal authority under this section. That's martial law. But they have to have the state law has to guide that, because that's where the communicable disease authority is to identify the infectious agent. And so you have, there's no preemption except they have to meet the exception. You have to be knowledgeable enough to reassert they didn't have the exception. And the way you do that, as I've told you before, you're going to have to get the document from the government, however you derive it. Even if it's their denial to have a record. You know, I've got a couple people that get that. Well, we don't have any record of that. And you wonder, what power is that? That's the record. That's all you need. They have no record. You not then now are then have to have the knowledge to say, there's no record and there's no implementation or due process for me. So we've got one, either I'm not a threat or you haven't implemented the due process that's required to me to make anything you do reasonable. Because under federal law, reasonability is really the only standard. So getting on now, I went a long way to try and show you there's a give and take on how you have to learn. Learning is fluid. Totally outside of the realm I wanted, I found the university. I go, well, let me find out how they handle it. A very interesting thing pops up. And it allows me now, I've told you now, I've told all the listeners now, for the first time, those two sections of federal law and essentially how to defeat them as a prevailing authority. Because it comes back to the state law, and now you still got to go to the statute. For your, wherever you're about, where your state, wherever you're about. And so I typed in another set of words, very similar, Idaho communicable disease and statute. And up pops what I'm looking for. I don't know why it didn't come up last time. I don't know why it didn't come up the first time. But here it is now. And so my point here is that you need to find, put your state in, put the word term communicable and term disease and statute, and see if for you, you can find your statutes. And now I have to talk generically. For your state and the communicable disease statutes, there's also administrative rules. Any websites that you're sent to the state, go use the state websites. And look very carefully, make sure their documents are up to date. You're looking for your administrative rules as well. And you're looking for agencies and how the thing is wired for your state. And it takes a little while. You got to slow down and pay attention to what's going on. Sometimes there's links. Sometimes you got to go do some research in the words that are being said. In this case, I was able to get right to one statute. Then I was able to get a couple more. And then from that, derive what I'm looking for relative to what I was explaining to y'all, how, what to compile for yourself to understand relative to communicable disease. You're looking for the duties and obligations of the officials. And you're looking for what the legislature has mandated, commanded they do. And this then derives the letter you might want to write. Because you're making an administrative record for those of you that can, even so now, that you, there is no is there a medical report with your name on it relative to SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19? And is there any determination based on that report or assessment, I go that way, that you are a risk to the public? That's really all you're asking for in the minimum. Now, I don't know if you are already anticipating, those of you that are really thinking about the process as I'm saying this, even if you're unfamiliar, if the statute requires a medical report and an assessment, that the one that they're going to act upon is subject to them, first of all, jurisdictions upon them, to be able to be told to do anything, whether isolation, quarantine, or limited conditional release. That's fascinating to me, that one. But relative to that, and there's a process, and they haven't done that process. It should be, you don't have to understand much more, I don't think. It doesn't seem to me that you have to. That you've been deprived of valuable due process and an objective determination for you that becomes your first point of reference. And you have the evidence of that. And for a couple of you that have gotten these obtuse answers relative to, oh, you got to give permission, I've still got to work that out I'm still working on that. I'm trying to give a most concise and efficient answer to some of you. That's going to be a different problem. But unless you're one of those, if you just get an answer like, we don't have a record, or there's nothing like that here, or whatever, no, just say we don't have that straight up, or you're not, any of that is your evidence starting out. That's your foundation that says you may, there is no jurisdiction in the state underneath the communicable disease statute to put the mitigation measures on you for prevention. And no, asymptomats are not guilty by that status. Why? Because there has to be an infectious agent before jurisdiction in the government attaches, from which a reasonable imposition might be derived for an employer. And we heard that professor had to go to write a federal suit, and he's the only one that's going to get that because he defended himself. And they're going to give him that thing, which he had problems as well, but that was still good enough. And that's good enough if that's good enough. That you agree that SARS-CoV-2 is something, or that COVID-19 is, you don't state that it's a fraud. He went and agreed with it. And even so, that threat was enough to back the employer off. He didn't even do what I'm saying. He's a law professor. He went right to two points, which we're going to touch a little bit today, that are valid as I do some more research, but require that you set this up. And I think it's fortified by what I've been telling you. When you show from the government, there's no medical report that they could have started the jurisdiction, and they're therefore, that proves there couldn't have been an assessment. So that would be consistent that you're not determined to be a risk. I'm wondering now what else people think they need, and where an employer has the right to impose anything, in particular a questionable thing. And I'm saying this even in spite and despite the fact that one treatment has been licensed. They're calling it approved, but I thought it was a license, and so I finally found that out too. It is a license. So here, just looking through, I couldn't find the statute for Idaho. I thought that was kind of interesting. I eventually found them. I compiled the things I found. I sent them off to the emailer of what I found and the administrative hearings and all the administrative rules and all this stuff. And I went through preliminary and read for the things I've talked to you and read from the documents over the past year and a half. It's all there, but it's a little different in Idaho, like it is state by state, case by case. They use their particular form and rules. There are certain duties and obligations that have to happen just like every other state. You have to know what those are, so that forms the questions that you may want to answer. The court came back in that one case in Philadelphia over about a year ago and said, well, the state has the obligation and burden to declare that somehow that man was, restaurateur was of infectious principle, or his business was a risk to the public. As employees inside that, you have to look at that a little differently because of that relationship, the master-slave relationship, the employer-employee relationship. And there's certain guidelines by which you must go. It's like administration process to go through for employment. You need to look for what the employer is not supposed to do that they've done. In other words, act unreasonably without merit. Even this should even be for at-will states. They might be able to fire you for like no reason, but they can't fire you for like a false reason, a fraudulent reason. And that becomes a discrimination also. And most important, I'm hanging a bit of this on the fact that they're doing that without any source of authority relative to the subject matter they're claiming, which is communicable disease, where no state official has declared you. Not your friend, not your husband, not your wife, not your son, not your daughter, nobody else but you. Have not been declared by official decree to be considered to be a potential carrier, even before, let alone an actual carrier where they have the isolated infection. So, we see with a population that doesn't flood their local jurisdictions with the simple questions whether or not they are the ones that are being blamed for this hospitalization and the potential. Remember, susceptibility was in that list in the university thing. That's why I found it so fast. I told you susceptibility, it's the corollary to transmissibility. And this is where that professor went too. He said, I've got an immune system that's going to protect me and protect the state as well, because if I'm not going to get sick, I'm not going to put a burden on the hospital. What I don't understand in all this is, how is anybody going to guarantee, that's like guarantee, like, I'm not going to die in life. I'm going to predict I'm always going to be healthy. We've never known that. That's never been a problem. Now it almost as if you're going to predict when you're going to get sick and for what. We also know if we ever get sick now, they'll blame it on COVID. And if you are a denier, a hesitant, you're going to be blamed for it. There's no record. And this is the additional record you might want to consider to make about the identification of the isolate. So that in that record, you realize that there was no test. You realize that there's no way to come to the determinations that they were supposed to in law. What is that? That's violating the legislative mandate, which was the due process. Obligations and duties, first of all, for the official to gain jurisdiction, to have an authority, to have a say. The provisions of which were to protect you, right or wrong, even if they're right, you still have limitation. Remember, there's a conditional release potential. Now, if you look in the rules that are in your state, there is a provision where you can argue that their mitigation's too much, even if you're someone with whatever it is. So here we have reference in that university paper that I wasn't looking for, but I found on an incorrect search, followed up by a correct search, that federal law can be ruling here. And why? I was wondering, why is Biden saying anything? Well, it's because of that municipal statute, Title 42. But is it properly applied to you? Not by that statute. Not even in time of war, where you're not infecting the military. In other words, as I pointed out, they're having the military, the National Guard, come door to door. They're causing their own infection. They're causing the threat. That alone should be giving you an ability to tell an authority somewhere, don't send them here because I don't want to be blamed for their stupidity contrary to that statute, 42 U.S.C. 266, where they're supposed to be protecting themselves from me if you're going to presume me guilty, which admits I had no due process under state law. So what you're doing is you're not twisting anything, but you contort. You're straightening out the bed sheet here to say it's not going to be so easy. I'm going to show you the way you're applying this is actually causing the problem that you were duty bound to protect against. So if 266 says the military should be protected from in contagion, and you presume me to be contagious because I'm asymptomatic, don't send them to my door. Otherwise, I have not been told that I am a contagion, part of the contagion, infectious principle. And that's impossible because there's no way to determine what it is you claim it is as an official. You don't have jurisdiction. So Biden declares jurisdiction. He's going through this 264 statute. Biden eyes tougher vaccine rules without provoking backlash. President Joe Biden speaks about prescription drug prices and his Build Back Better agenda. When the pace of vaccination in the U.S. first began to slow, President Joe Biden backed incentives like million-dollar cash lotteries if that's what it took to get shots in the arms. But as a new coronavirus infection soar, he's testing a tougher approach. Folks, this is where I've been telling you. If you get that letter that says you're not part of the problem, he doesn't have authority. Whatever he's saying is not reasonable. If you go read those statutes that I started to read over there, 42, 264, and 266, the standard is reasonableness. There is no reasonableness to something they can't identify. There's no reasonableness in the absence of a declaration of a local official about you being there. Where a third-party employer has power on this, I can't even understand. But I'm not so sure, and without even reading the employer, that they have to act reasonably too. In other words, even in a no state, I think it is this way, even in an at-will state, they can fire you for no good reason. But when they use a reason that's fraud, that's no good. And you have grounds. And if that may be the only thing you have, it may not protect your job ultimately, but you have grounds. And I'm kind of encouraged that people would step up, get their letter, step up and defend themselves, even if they lose their job. They're likely going to be lost anyway relative to this political attack, this war that's against us. You're probably going to lose anyway, but you've established why you were right, that they were unreasonable, and you take your services somewhere else that will be appreciated. somehow I'm not thinking this is so bad at some level. Yes, it's a terrible thing to have to go through. Yes, our lives are being destroyed, but that's the irreparable harm that we can't solve when we have psychopaths in office that figure out how to not provoke a backlash. What do they just tell you in that title? Be the backlash, folks. Be the backlash for yourself. And this authority that I was saying doesn't exist, it really doesn't exist, but they can point to a statute. You have to defeat that statute. The only way, you're not going to do that by your opinion. You're going to do that by showing that there's no fulfillment of any law that was required to be done against you, and you're being blamed. You're innocent, but you're being blamed. And that's the fraud. That's the harm. That's the wrong. The habeas comes back in mind, right here. And here's those of us, be the backlash. Why do some people support tyranny while others defy it? Another report from Brandon Smith, I think I reported on him writing some other things. He goes through quite an interesting discussion. I found, well, it's not like I don't understand it. It's just that seeing it written down, explaining what people will put up with, why they do it, and yet, and the tactics and the techniques, like going through the titles, the fear engine, the safety of the mob. He goes through the false piety of, in place of self-worth, of what. Again, you put yourself out. You put yourself out on a cause that you don't otherwise can't otherwise have because you're not really together. You find important self-importance in doing that. The love of a cage. He goes through a lot of these things. Lots of headings for why people would like to. And boy, it's prevalent. I couldn't deny much of what he's saying here, which I guess is the point about this article. And then he points out that they're defiant and free. He points out there's a group of people that are defiant and free. Well, we're not free of that oppression, but we're not going to put up with it. And so be the, relative to the backlash that they're trying to avoid, that's what I've been telling you have to be. Man to a man and to a woman, each one of you. And part of the thing I've offered is through practice and experience dealing in other areas that don't look much different to me than the conflagration of the COVID. Is like a fire. How we defeated that was you go right to the black and white and you put that right up front. And you don't let anybody move you away from that. It's essentially a paper shield, if you will, but it's a black and white thing that no one, it's not an opinion. And that's the most important part. They point here. They deal with opinions that get you to buy in. In fact, I was just prior to the broadcast here and RLM was playing, I think it was BTW RLM 416. I went through a lot of this before. I explained a lot of this on how this dynamic works. On the things, the institutions that we think are exalted, but we've put a lot of value in as people, are not. They're actually put themselves there to hurt you. It's somewhat like child services. Some of the most heinous people claim to help children, and they're in child services, and they're not. And I don't say that of no idle opinion. I paid a relative to other people who did the study and the report and the investigation. I'm alive. How serious what I was looking into relative to child services and the corruption that is. People who will have a big smiley face, I'm going to help the children, and they're not there to help the children at all. They're there to exploit the children under cover, under color of authority to do so. And there is no institution in the world I've looked at that isn't that way, it seems. We've always been in this war, this oppression. And COVID, I thought, was going to allow us to see that and we could respond to it. And to my dismay, most people are those that would agree. And they will not become defiant and free, as this article speaks about. And part of the way you do that is identify where the objective authority's jurisdiction is and where authority is and where it's not. And you make sure that you can articulate that you're not in the place that anybody has control over and over you. Over you is this thing where all you're saying, show me where you had the first medical report that thought I was potential. Was there an assessment? What was the outcome of that assessment? And do you have official record that I've been determined to be a risk to the public? And then you get that. You get whatever, you get the response. Notwithstanding a couple of weird, obtuse answers. That's an evasion of my mind, and it's a little more difficult to deal with. But it's not, that to my mind is not difficult at all to deal with. It's whomever is, has that happen to them. Are they able, capable? Can they do more? Sometimes we're just filled up with all we have to do. And so we have to really consider that well before we start advancing something that we really can't follow through with. I don't advance any jeopardy to people, and I try not to make it too complicated, really, although it sounds like a lot going on here, but and we try not to get you too much into the deep end, you're not going to be able to swim out. And so there's a big consideration for everybody. Every issue is different. You could be in the same company and have a totally different approach. It'll all be based in the same failure by the government side, but how you can deal with it is always going to be up to you, actually. I certainly can't dictate any of that. I can just say, this is what you're going to consider to have to do if you go that path. Again, I can put you on the trailhead. I can even tell you what the path, some of the path looks like, but your journey is going to be specific to each one of you. And right now, it's necessary. So how are we going to, you know, here's the first story, a nice article about talking about people that, you know, why do people, some people put up with tyranny and some don't? Well, here's what I told you was coming. And those of you that's homeschool may want to consider this, or not homeschool, but allow your son and daughter into becoming a student of the government. This is what starts to happen. What they do is they take away your capacity. So I've explained this over and over, incremental, you know, what they call dumbing down. In this regard, you're seeing the telegraphing of maybe two things. One thing for sure, but another latently, where we find how are we going to be a population that's going to be more easily, I did it again, Vince, taken down. You see this right here. Oregon governor signs bill to end reading math proficiency requirements for high school graduation. Those of you that have sons and daughters that are going to school, and this is the future that you, if you're going to have, if you continue in the public school system, that a governor actually signed a bill and the legislature actually enacted a law that said that there is no proficiency now in your high school. What is that doing? To me, that's speaking to two things. First of all, they want you even dumber. They don't care that you're not proficient in the language that they're going to put against you. First of all, that's the legal language, which most people don't understand anyway. We are said that a judge has to tell us what that is, even though common law says that we all know what the law is. And so you see, you're not in law, you're in legal in that land. They don't even want you to be proficient there. They don't want you to be proficient even in the language that you use in the streets. But I think this is anticipating something else, maybe a little bit of hyperbole here, because I can't prove it. But what if this is actually an anticipation of the little ones getting the shots, the little ones' brains, and the autism that you see happens in injections normally? But because they have been attacking your little ones for years, it's becoming apparent to them, notwithstanding their indoctrination principles, the students cannot produce proficiency, and they still have to move them through. We'd be in a even more, much worse condition if that's really the case. But they know that these shots, and maybe necessarily these COVID vaccines that they're bringing on in Idaho, no less, 14 years old without consent, that shocked me. Found that sitting there. 14, they can consent to all kinds of medical practice. And there is an out. The parents have to jump, the so-called parent, the custodian of the ward of the child of the state. There's still an out. And you're going to have to know what that is. And I told you what that is already as I saw it before. But part of this has to do with anticipating what the costs are going to be on you. That little one that's been given consent can't do that and is going to emburden you in your life without notice and without opportunity to mitigate. Okay, side shot. Back over here. What if this situation is anticipating? Remember, Oregon's a pioneer police state. It's not just new and not just my opinion. It's how this works. Massachusetts is the other side, and they're actually more pioneer police state in education destruction. But Oregon's the first to move to say, you don't even have to be proficient in math or reading or whatever. What if they're anticipating, and they can't, and the students can't meet it now. We used to call it bonehead. Coming out of high school, going into college, bonehead classes in college, because you didn't quite make it. Now they don't even have to be proficient. What kind of a future is that to college, first of all? Secondly, how are these folks, these young folks, going to interpret, be able to interpret their world I can tell you that illiteracy is a serious problem in the miners, about 25%. And they're not; these are not dumb guys. They're just not literate. And encouraging them to become literate almost changes their life. I can only imagine when a state decides that you don't have to be proficient in language or math. What kind of a future are you looking at? That really, what if they're doing this in anticipation that they know that they're going to have just future generations of people that are incapable because of what they're doing to them medically, so-called medically. And so they're already making the standard. They're ahead of us, folks. They're making the standard that your little ones are not going to be capable to be proficient. And that's not going to be a standard anyway. Is that the world in the future you want? That's the future they want. Maybe a little bit aside where we were going, but it's essentially tied on, piggybacking on, why are some people tolerant to tyranny? Maybe they've been allowed to go. You've let your fallen nature has been taken advantage of to be lazy. And when you were young, you didn't even know that. You thought you were just having fun. It was just your life, right? You're not even capable. And these people are exploiting that in all of you all, in your sons and daughters. And this is the first shot across the bow of the future generations they talk about. Now I'm going to move into, okay, so we got people that are listening. I hope I did a little bit of justice. And go to your statutes. Understand there's problems finding the statutes, but then keep persevering. Read, look, educate yourself. Start reading. Put your time into what you're going to do. Find your state statutes of the communicable disease, what's supposed to happen. Find the duties and obligations. Take a list, copy and paste. Well, you could make documents. This is before knowing anything I would talk about even the isolate, right? That comes next. Once you find out what they're supposed to do, then you say, well, how are they supposed to to make the determination when I've heard there's no isolate? Right? That's just should be self-evident. So you go through your list for your state. You compile what has to happen. You could make a very longer letter of 5-8 points. Like Nevada, I found, there must be 15 steps they've got to do. I thought it was fascinating. You could write a letter that's 15 steps long. Can you show me this? Show me this? Show me the result of this, 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 every step. Some states was 5. Tennessee was 5. Some states were 3. We've got it down to 2 because the courts that we found out, they're only interested in whether the burden of the state had met its burden to prove that the man or the woman is the contagious principle. They infect themselves on their own, or their establishment infects on its own. Relating over to employment, that would say, well, the same thing. If you apply that internally, you have one more step to apply it pursuant to your employment rules, how you make an argument, an arbitration process, or whatever. I wouldn't expect it to go too well, but what you're doing is establishing that you're not the problem and they're not being reasonable. But you're not doing it by your opinion because you're an asymptomat. They've targeted that. You're doing that because there's no official designation and you have the evidence of that. Then you have to now apply it. Now you've got that evidence. Where do you apply it? Well, it's usually in a court of law or through an arbitration process. And now that gets us back to that professor. And so I'm going to give you back here a link back to that article. Professor granted a vaccine exemption after he sues university to recognize natural immunity. In there is his complaint with his affidavits from, I think it was 2 doctors. You need to go read in there and find it because he brings up an interesting concept. And it's the unconstitutional conditions doctrine. And I have 2 links to 2 documents that goes through and explains this. You have to read these very carefully. They're not applicable across the board. You've got to go also find out how the Supreme Court has treated these. Because despite that, looking through this, I believe I see for employed people and taking the lead of the professor, there is a way to apply the unconstitutional conditions doctrine. Essentially, it's what most people have, anybody doing any reading, it's that you can't waive your fundamental rights. They can't impose something that strips you of your fundamental rights or trades it for a privilege. That's the nutshell of that for some people that have read that. That's what this unconstitutional conditions doctrine is, that the law professor fighting against getting his waiver for his natural immunity utilized. This subject matter is quite extensive. I really don't have the time to go through it. I think anybody who would just read this information will be oriented in such a way to take what I've been saying all along and start to apply it more properly. I will have to say that I do not agree with the professor agreeing that SARS-CoV-2 is something and COVID-19 pandemic is a thing. I think that's a failure. That leads him into a potential problem. He was able, and this is case by case, he's the only one that's going to get this waiver. The university did not extend it to everyone else. I've told you this is a case by case, man for man, woman for woman fight for your rights. This case is proving that out. They did it through an administrative process, somewhat. He went to the courts to make a point. He did get some attorneys. You may have to try and do that yourself if you're not capable. Maybe contact these same people. But they made a problem for themselves when they agreed that COVID-19 was something and SARS-CoV-2 was something, despite what the CDC says. See, this is the problem with the attorneys. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know how an attorney thinks. There is a feasibility to not arguing so much and to target the win. For the win. And I'll agree with that at some level. The problem is, you see, it only targets for one. It doesn't address the fraud. It allows that to continue because they've agreed. This professor actually agrees that the fraud is real. It's not a fraud. And so I'm not completely wrapped up with a lot of this. However, it points us in a direction. And in this case, he uses the Ninth Amendment and the 14th Amendment. And it's interesting because what comes out of this eventually is an ongoing potential question, which I got a link for. Thank you to to Cowboy Tech in the RLM just before the broadcast. It says university caves on vaccine lawsuit, but questions remain. And I want to point out, I want to be consistent with this and consistent in that the confirmation is consistent. As long as you don't attack this thing as a fraud, it will always maintain questions because you have not struck the jurisdiction from authority. And they will continue to have ability to be reasonable. My approach is to call it out for the fraud and you take out any reasonableness. And some of the question that remains here relative to this action that only the one professor acquired, this is in the employment side, was that the university is not going to extend his immunity, which is still an unchallenged and untested judicial potential. But the problem that comes out of it is that they have a say, and he doesn't go to an administrative record that shows that he was, not only does he have an immunity, that they can't match the transmissibility or susceptibility test you heard in the other document, but they can't even get him on the radar lawfully. And when you get that, the question of whether a federal court could actually decide this, because it was truncated by the university agreeing first and they stopped the suit. The real question you're now at when you're deprived of the due process of the state is that they did not in this state follow the due process that was mandated by the legislature. And your rights to due process were violated under the same provision that this professor just moves relative to his Ninth Amendment. You are actually deprived of due process, and that under the 14th Amendment, and that underneath the Civil Rights Act for deprivation of rights under color of law. Without due process, you now have a federal cause, as I understand it. And so what I'm saying is that he can't get there. He can't get there if he agrees that SARS-CoV-2 is something or COVID-19 is something, because he then agrees he's been given due process. He's only arguing that they didn't consider his natural immunity to defeat the susceptibility portion or the transmissibility portion that would give them the authority, and the university didn't want to fight it. That said, you can do whatever is the outcome you need to free yourself. I'm not so sure that's actually going to work in every instance because this university is resistant to extend that to everybody else, tells you this is, again, battle, man for man, woman for woman. You're only going to get the rights you assert correctly. This was correct enough. when it says here in the follow-up, because everyone's watching this now, they're looking, and the people that want to continue to oppress you are going to find ways around this. So when this question pops up, this is kind of the first, one of those things where the first guy to speak wins. The rest will likely fall unless you shift the goalpost. And I don't mean shift it for the sake of shifting the goalpost. You shift the goalpost that should have been into the denial that they have jurisdiction. And that is the deprivation of due process to you, which is the protectable, fundamental protectable interest that I think due process may be the only thing you can argue. I think it's really reduced down to that. Unless you can find a material and substantial due process violation, you may not have a right to protect. In this case, denying the entire mandate of the legislature at the state level is a complete denial of due process. And so for those that are employees, again, it's a little bit to go on. You without a basis from what I'm telling you, you don't know your communicable disease laws, you don't know how it's oriented, you don't know the obligations and duties. It's very difficult, quick, in order to keep track. I think once you get the black and white in your eyes, slow down and think about how this is supposed to put it, physical things going on, not this epidemiological data nonsense. Physical things have to be going on. Physical things have to be found. Physical things have to be documented officially in certain ways. You'll see all this in your communicable disease. Once you've established that hasn't been done, you have a due process failure for you that are depriving you of fundamental rights. That can't be you see, I'm just one step past the professor now. That cannot be considered reasonable by any stretch of the imagination. And where even an at-will state says, makes a reason why they fired you instead of just letting you go, when they make a reason and it's fraudulent or unreasonable, I believe you still have a remedy with that. Now, that certainly may cause a problem with your employer. You can't be in good terms, I think. Maybe you could. Maybe they like to be educated. I don't know. That there's going to be some tension there anyway, but if you don't, you're likely going to get the job and be destroyed forever. I can't see it. Listen, I cannot see how a bioweapon made under dual use for military, under military rule, is a thing for you. I just can't see it. And then we find out the ingredients in this thing are not a virus at all. It's a chemical weapon. I can't even imagine people even considering it. I can believe it if you're not intelligent enough and you don't have a question and you're tolerant and you like tyranny. I can see how you would agree. But anybody like we found last week, if you can be really, really, really dumb and not want to do it, or you can be really, really, really smart and not want to do it. And the only distinction between the two ends of the spectrum is the really, really dumb people who don't want to do it initially can be encouraged to change their mind. I'm asking you to be really, really intelligent and not change your mind, but you have to protect yourself in certain ways. You find your state statute, you find the duties, you get the letter that says you're not the problem, essentially, relative to the terminology used in your state. And you might even, like I said, I'd like to use the word assessment rather than determination, because the courts have come back and said, well, if a determination's made, that's authority. That's proper. Well, how about if we stop using that word then, because they're adulterating the meaning of that. And like Kanukistan uses assessment. I'd rather say make an assessment then, under the form of a determination. And that's only because of the way that the courts treat that term. Take that term away so they don't mistreat your condition and what was supposed to happen. What was the assessment if there was a report? And did that assessment, and is there evidence that I was a risk to the public? And this is no different a conversation I've had on a lot of other broadcasts where I'm also talking to you about how to address accommodations in third-party businesses where you're a customer, in the Pioneer Police State as well, because that one was, again, the worst that you can do. They've actually given the right to interfere with your accommodation to the third-party business to actually have to ask you so that you have to accommodate. It's a facial violation, but hardly anybody sees that as well. However, the answer is the same. They're only in the final answer. The ultimate point is that the third party is going to want to, they're afraid they can declare that you're a risk. When you have your documentation, you take that away from them. If the only thing that they ultimately have is that they consider you a risk, And that's their only defense. And they don't have that. What's the outcome going to be? Well, I don't know about that one, but they certainly can't now show reasonability on their imposition when they tried to take your livelihood away. That's another protectable right. That due process, the failure of due process, because not following your state statutes, whether it's three steps or 15, or even a couple inside, just identify a few, just one, if even. Medical report, is there a medical report on me? I could extrapolate that on out, but I'd rather have the crux, the nuggets stated by the oppressor. I want the oppressor to tell me they have no information on a medical report or that they don't have one, and I want them to say there was either no assessment or there's no evidence of an assessment. That's good enough, too, of risk. If there was no assessment of risk, then that proves there was no due process. For a federal lawsuit, where I've said, do not go to the federal lawsuits to challenge this. For a federal lawsuit that was threatened like the professor did, he brought up the 14th Amendment, then brings up the 9th. You have to have one underneath the 10th to the 1st to invoke the 14th. You also bring up now due process, where you have evidence that you are not, there was no medical report, you're being imposed without the assessment and beyond and without being declared to be a risk, and your fundamental rights of employment are being infringed. Now I think you're in a better place to go if you have to go to the federal, if you need to go to the federal, relative to a law professor's attack. Successful attack for him. And I don't, again, I read this stuff and I've been telling you exactly, because I have to confirm whether or not I'm telling you the truth all the time. I'm always thinking, am I doing this right? I mean, all these little, these nuances. This is proving out what I've said. It's man to man, woman to woman. You're going to protect yourself. You have to step up. You're going to only get the rights that you assert. There's a certain way to do it. I've looked at this and it seemed clear to me that it would be through the obligations and duties in every state, and any third party authority is going to have to come relevant to that. And even in employment, there has to be, you have look in your rules for employment that there has to be, if they give a reason, it has to be reasonable. Again, reason. If they give a reason, it's reasonable. It's based in something substantial. When you take that foundation from them, particularly based in a communicable disease, by definition, it's unreasonable. Where you end up going with that or how that serves you is all dependent, to my mind, on the potential corruption. And I don't want to put a negative pall on that. You still need, your papers are that you're not the problem. See, if you understand, I haven't used the word asymptomat in this letter, see? Because it's irrelevant. Because their jurisdiction for both the federal and the state authority is on the infectious agent. The isolation and identification of the infectious agent in you. Or about your business, and really these things are misapplied to businesses because that was really the health laws, not the communicable disease. It's more like what you would do, you know, for having a clean restaurant and the proper food handling and all that stuff. However, getting back to this. Employees have 2 points. One is to look at your arbitration rules on what's the standard that the employer has to meet, and then you look at the communicable disease standard of the laws, and you get a letter that it's been complied with, in that there has been no medical report, no data, no record of one, or that you're not, have not been determined a risk. That's the counter to the reasonableness. And I think you're sitting in a much more powerful position to have that in your pocket than your opinion. And whatever else you might say about all the stuff and the give and the take about so-called science that's out there and having to argue with people. When you show there's no jurisdiction in the state government to impose anything on you, then anything that the employer does cannot be reasonable. And where even in the face of an attorney general of the federal government saying there's no federal law, if you read carefully, the federal law refers to the state law where it's not inconsistent with the federal law. Well, the federal law requires due process too, and that's the kickback. That's why we focus in on due process. And you're not going to know that if you don't find your statutes and do the reading and research. If you really want to assert your rights and protect yourself, and you want to be free, you're going to have to resist, you're going to have to push back in the way they, Biden doesn't want the backlash. You be the backlash. Maybe that's the title of the broadcast. Again, I just offer these opportunities for people to not be victims. I keep thinking about that. There's so much to really go through, but it's really so simple in a way. Can you do yourself a favor to read the statutes of duty and obligation upon that narrow section that you find in the statutes? And if you have to go to a rule, then you might have to go to a rule to how that was supposed to be laid out within the department. And you find out what the steps were, and you pick the beginning, if you will, the alpha and the omega. As I saw a list, they're going to have many variants from the beginning, starting with delta to the omega. Interestingly consistent with what Dr. David Martin said in a passing comment, they're going to go to omega. It was supposed to be the beginning and the end, right? And Dr. David Martin having a religious connotation built into what he's talking about, that's what they're talking about. Isn't it interesting? It's scheduled to, we'll have omega variant in 2023, I'm told. So this is a long-term thing that if you're not part of the problem and you're not, that you got evidence of that, your papers are. In fact, if you think about the fact that you're going to be potentially facing the National Guard, you just show them your papers. I'm not infectious. I'm not, notwithstanding, get away from me. You're contagious. You shot mongrel. You're contagious. I'm not someone that can give you the cooties. And so stay away from me. You don't have an authority here, even at the federal level. And I've been saying that this letter is very, very important to have in your possession. And I say that as I say that, I don't know if anybody heard, in Southern and Central Oregon, the governor is sending the National Guard to help in non-medical ways to get this vaccine going. Non-medical ways just screamed isolation, okay? And so maybe warning to y'all in Southern and Central Oregon. The same governor that says that your little ones don't have to be proficient in math or reading is sending the thugs as a presence even to intimidate. And a government that rules by fear, intimidation, and dread is a terroristic government by definition. The government that rules by fear, intimidation is the terms that define the term terrorism. Moving on to people who are fighting themselves and helping to fight, Dr. Pam Popper's advance to me by an email, and thank you again, fighting medical tyranny, those who want to fight, folks, right? Be free for yourself, not free of the tyranny until you down it. You have to down that one too, until we get the example, that's not going to go down. Dr. Pam Popper, Fighting Medical Tyranny, COVID Policy Consequences, and How We Win, The Higher Side Chats, an article you can read if you're looking for help beyond a little bit I can offer here. Dr. Pam Popper is the doctor that advanced her as a cause, a lawsuit through the attorney Rents. I'm not satisfied with the agreement again, that with the COVID-19 pandemic agreement that it exists, or SARS-CoV-2, although they challenged that the test could be done. Their case is still unmoving. But she has moved on beyond that, and she comes together, I think, weekly. For those of you that don't want to be beat down, that want to help, she is doing a national thing. You might want to get in touch with her. I'll give you the link. What she's doing is, she's a go-getter lady, I'll tell you that. Whether or not it's all what I would agree is irrelevant. If you need people to talk with, to work with, to be focused with, that'll help you resist and be the backlash, I want to offer this that was offered to me a couple weeks ago. I'm just now getting to it. The Fighting the Medical Tyranny, COVID Policy Consequences and How We Win. And listening to her on a video, which I think may be in this article, that you can listen to, I really admire her for what she's trying to pull together for lots and lots and lots of people. This, again, She cannot answer your questions for you. She can only help guide you, as I understand it. She'll help bring you together with people. And I'm absolutely agreeable. Again, the professor didn't quite challenge this thing quite right, but he, for himself, got his waiver. So I'm not going to argue that point. What I would like is that people moving forward, denounce this thing for the fraud it is and end it, so we can stop having to have people be subjected to this crime. Also, American frontline doctors, vaccines in the law, people, doctors coming together trying to help out. They have a web page on forms that you could fill out, consent form, constituent forms, Adventist constituent forms, firefighting constituent forms. These are trying to offer you, if you have no other things to say, they may have a form you can do. My caveat to you is go back to your state statute, and I don't find that the statutes are being used. Bring the duties and obligations into those forms. Do not use any forms you find in a blank. You look and start to understand what it's supposed to do and make sure it fulfills what you have to have done. I have told you this before, and I've given some examples. I've never seen a form on the internet for anything that actually would meet everything that you might need. This is a case-by-case basis, and a lot of these things, no one recites the laws that are imposing themselves upon the officials before they act. They just try to deal with the consequence, as you saw Pam Popper even say. They're doing the consequences and how we win. Well, I don't know if you can deal with the consequences and win, but she's a resource of mutual help. That's why she's powerful. The doctors here, resource of mutual help. It doesn't mean they're the definitive help for any one of you. Another group of people, finally, have been my main, I'm not bowing to the authority of the Bar Association here, but finally, the people that should have stepped up didn't, now do in India. The country, India Bar Association sues WHO, but the Rock Group or the OWL, not even the WHO of WHOville, but the World Health Organization, scientists for the murder of Indian citizens by misleading them about ivermectin. So the Indian Bar Association steps up. I don't know what the condition of this. People are starting to resist. It's high time the Bar Association stepped up to do that. And they're talking about here, that ivermectin, remember, we've only been given that the only thing that could happen would be the vaccines. The law requires a lot more, and the law requires that they find lesser. Remember, a conditional release is also conditional treatment, and that's not up to the government. That's up to your doctor. And nothing prohibits off-label use, notwithstanding what the CDC might say they never found it to be good for. What if, as I've been saying, this is not viral, this is chemical. What if, and I'm not saying, these are rhetorical, these are not questions, this is what goes on, that ivermectin has been found to disassemble the graphene oxide substrate upon which everything is absorbed or hung onto or injected into in the construction of the novel protein constructed Trojan horse as a chemical weapon. What if we found out it has nothing to do with biology? It has to do with ivermectin acting more like a chelator, and it just disassembles stuff as another thing it does. So the CDC, again, saying it doesn't work here doesn't mean it doesn't work or some way else, like the DOJ saying, oh, federal law doesn't prohibit an employer from mandating whatever, I mean, vaccines or whatever. Well, but state law might, you think, if you go read and find out. Maybe you don't know that. Maybe that's the problem. We don't know that. Our ignorance is killing us. We perish for lack of knowledge. And we perish not just for the lack of knowledge, because we won't apply correctly the knowledge we may have or gain. So the Indian Bar Association is going after WHO scientists, not the WHOville scientists, the WHO scientists, for murdering Indian citizens. Finally, an acknowledgement from those that were in the best position, the profession that was supposed to guard, if you look at their words, guard as the governments and the people through their constitutions. another help on the road coming down from all different places. If you look, I don't care where the help comes from. I may condemn the Pentagon, what it's doing. I may show you that the War Department is first and foremost in the dual use type of thing in order to use chemical, radiological, biological weapons against you, except don't do it, except all that same pattern. Well, here we have from the Pentagon. Pentagon reveals how military service members can get religious exemptions to mandatory vaccines. And that was pretty startling because it's been told to me, you don't refuse anything in the military. Here it is. Now, they're going to explain to you something. You're not in the military that you can directly have, but they will explain that there's a process in the military. Again, there's processes, I guess I want to point out. And it isn't so easy for those that are in there to get these exemptions. But those people that needed the exemption and persevered, and they have to make a statement that they earnestly adhere to their belief. You know, the technicality, you have to learn what these are things that you have to do. You have to endure the oppression, which I would say is another actionable consequence. But they will give you a pathway, even if you're in the military, on exempting yourself. And you're just going to have to be the one that pushes it through for you. Again, it's every man or woman for themselves. Even the most oppressive place I can imagine, where your GI, your government issue, your government property, still allows this thing. And if they allow it there, I don't know what the problem is out. So, again, another link. You can go research, figure out how to do this. And then on the Gab, I ran across. I don't know Gab. I don't know anything about Gab. It just came up in a return. Important download COVID vaccine religious exemption documents here. This is going to be a thing as we move forward. You're going to have a certain understanding of how this applies. They're going to probably try and take this away because the implementers are probably pagan and they don't agree in religion that way. Again, nature, right? Nature rules and exploiting those in nature rules. But here, go to Gab. We'll have a link. Take the downloads again. It's for these documents that you may need to see to understand the language that's being used in order to create your own record as you build this in case you're being imposed. And if it's, again, even if it's not a final thing, it's something it's a record you make that you tried to do so. In other words, you have to have alternatives that you're doing as well. And here's some more documents. I'm cautioning, be careful not just to put your John Hancock, unless you're not John Hancock, maybe whoever else you are, on these forms without really understanding what they're saying and whether or not they really do what it is you expect them to do. To me, they're doing the consequences. To me, you need to get your letter. The form you should fill out is your letter identifying whether the officials have have a medical report on the front end or the assessment that you're a risk to the public on the back end and any steps in between that you might find. That is the first document you want in your bag of authority and law for you. Because once you show that there's no record of you being a threat, a potential threat, well, at least a threat, the potential threat they can make up, that's something I noticed as well has to be dealt with. But for us today, as soon as you have a record that you're not the threat, and you're not the risk, I hope you can see the power in that to diffuse and to negate any authority that comes pursuant to a presumption that you are. How else can we help each other? And we're going to move in now. We're moving in now to the world is reacting to these nonsenses. And we get into now vaccine passports. And we're going to find out why those have become important the whole time. The entire time they've been important before this thing got going. But watch vaccinated Italians burn their vaccine passports to unite with unvaccinated. We the people are going to, regardless of our station, left unvaccinated or vaccinated, we're going to have to really unite against this foe. The people that choose to vaccinate are saying, I'm going to burn my card. I'm going to be, even though I'm vaccinated, I'm going to place myself into the state of an unvaccinated one because they had the right to not. and I'm going to support that. So even if you have a vaccine, if you're vaccinated, you still have a power to support what is right to be done. Even if you're convinced you needed to get it. And I'm hopeful and pray that you don't have adverse effects going down the road. Other people resisting around the world. French resist. Only half of Paris cafes and restaurants are demanding draconian vaccine passports. The other half are not. And so then Macaroni Man is now going to send in the police to beat down on those that aren't going to insist on the proof of vaccination, your vaccine passport. All right, this has been coming. It's been predicted. It's a thing. It wasn't ever going to be avoided. And this last week, we get the reason why. And I've told you, this all ties into Agenda 2030. The bottom line of Agenda 2030 is a financial destruction where you're forced into austerity. You are property. You have no property. And you'll like it. You've heard all this Klaus Schwab talk about. I've talked about this for years and years and years. It's the condition of the Agenda 21 that was talked about. Agenda 2030 was the goal set to be accomplished to 2030. We now hear right out of the mouth, this is why I love when they talk about, they admit and confess this stuff. I wish people were to listen behind the woodshed long ago. We would have cut all this down. We would have knocked these people down at the knees, and they wouldn't have this kind of force and effect that they do now. But IMF chief, vaccines will be most important economic policy in 2021. She said this, I think, a month or two ago. I just gotten wind of it last week. Kristalina Georgieva, director of the International Monetary Fund, said during an event on Wednesday that vaccine policy should be the top economic priority for 2021. Vaccine policy this year, probably next. It's not going away, folks. Probably next. Understand you're talking economy here. I'm talking the IMF, folks. Give this some importance on the comprehensive control and the reason for the control. Vaccine policy this year, probably next year, is going to be the most important economic policy. Vaccine policy is the most important economic policy. May beat even monetary and fiscal policy in terms of significance. This policy displaces both monetary and fiscal policies of your governments. Quote, a prerequisite to bring the world to a sustained high level of growth everywhere is to vaccinate all people, and that's not yet done. We have a two-track vaccination path right now. We have to overcome that. What's the two-track? You choose no. You choose to backlash. You choose to resist and be free from this imposition physically, but then you have to now turn to stop it outward as an invasion, as an attack. Moving on here, this is the bottom line here, folks. CNBC notes that IMF said that in May that an investment of $50 billion should be an expedited COVID, an investment of $50 billion should be spent on expedited COVID-19 vaccine rollout, predicting that investment would have a return of $9 trillion. Is this about your health, folks? Is this about your care? Is this about a pandemic? This is about economy. This is about how efficiently they're going to make profit on you. And all the players you know are involved in through this. So-called elites. Speaking on the CNBC financial journalist Jeff Cutmore at the Wednesday event, Georgia said this plan would have the, quote, the best return on investment in our lifetimes. Is that for you, folks? Is the IMF in for investment? If you didn't know about that, maybe you should go look at the monetary system, the fiscal system, and the money, so-called money, the control system in this world. But I've been telling you the focus is going to be here. When we start seeing these folks go into digital stuff, I told you be careful. blockchain was a testing ground. You were giving them the answers. They've got what they need. They're moving. During the event, the IMF head also touched on vaccine certificates that allow travelers to visit our other countries. At the beginning of June, the European Union's digital COVID-19 certificate program was launched in 7 countries. The program allows countries to see if a person has recently tested negative for COVID-19, recently recovered from the virus, or has been vaccinated. Having a vaccination card that shows when you are vaccinated is a very useful tool. It is already being applied. I do believe that we need to look into applying this more broadly, she said. According to the World Health Organization, more than 2.3 billion COVID-19 vaccine doses have been administered worldwide. If you don't want to see the glowing, the coming brain fog in the climate change that's going to be happening here. This is vaccine policy is economic policy. I told you climate change, Greta didn't get done. The COVID-19 will. It was to advance Agenda 2030. You're thrown into austerity. It actually got locked down, if you don't think that was what austerity meant. And that was called prosperity under Agenda 2030. I've read all about this. And the bottom line you find, go to 3/4 of the way into that document, and you show this is all about an economic hit on the world. The greatest investment in our lifetimes is not you. Another story I'm going to give you a link, because they say slightly different information for us. Vaccines will be the most important economic policy this year, so says the IMF chief, if you didn't understand what this was really about. If that doesn't show you, just in that statement, what this is about against you, and this is an attack, a financial attack against you, I really don't know how much more clear to be saying it than what they're saying. What they're saying themselves. Near the bottom of this issue, talking about this vaccination certificate, that she wants to see that more applied more broadly. It's a very useful tool. And then you see at the last line, Wednesday's CNBC Global Summit is being held remotely. They're not even in the same room now. That's governance, e-government, across the globe, making decisions for you on your economic welfare in the future. Okay, this vaccine issue is not about health. It's an economic policy. And based in this, I want to point out about this vaccine passports. We go through real quickly without referencing more, and you're not going to, you may get the links in the broadcaster, but I'm not going to read them. Just headlines that can be found. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis vaccine passport bound. He tried to ban it based on a ship. The judge came in and said, no, you can't do that against that ship. They can ask for the passport. You don't think this is hooked up, connected very tightly to the dollar, so to speak, right? This fiat currency, this fiat control structure. It goes to the International Bank of Settlements. Everything you've heard is all involved in this. Macron says showing police your papers to visit a cafe is about freedom. Italy to introduce vaccine passports for public transport. Vaccine passports likely to arrive in Australia before the end of the year. Mobile driver's licenses pave the way for unified digital IDs. UN globalists arriving in UK for a climate summit won't face COVID restrictions imposed on British citizens. The future we want is not imposed upon them. It is imposed upon you. This is an economic hit on the world. This has nothing to do with a health emergency. It has everything to do with bringing you into being that exploited being on the earth by these psychopathic controllers who operate at a distance. The vaccine passports are here. They want more implementation. They're going to get that if you don't become the backlash. Moving into the promotion of this more, we see now getting people to believe this thing is real Amazing 3D images show the coronavirus infecting human airway cells. A team in the Netherlands have managed to capture 3D images of human airway cells infected with SARS-CoV-2 using an extraordinary microscopic technique. The images show how the coronavirus alters the structure of the cells it infects and might help drug development. Do you believe that, folks? They haven't isolated SARS-CoV-2. What do they think they're looking at? I want you to get this article, and I want you to see the video. Can you believe that what you see is real? Can you believe, even if you look past the SARS-CoV-2, they don't even know what they're looking at then? If you even believe that they're looking at that, do you believe what they're showing you on this 3D imaging? Isn't Photoshopped? But see, this is the promotion that keeps hitting, despite the fact that they've agreed this has nothing to do with health. This is about cooking the books. And we see, CDC admits, moving on, CDC admits in massively overcounted Florida COVID cases. So I need to read more here, folks. I've been telling you this over and over. Other people, too. Why do we continue to allow the fraud to continue by not attacking the fraud? Well, let's do the consequence. No, let's go after the fraud. CDC admits it massively overcounted Florida's COVID data. How could it not? It doesn't have a test. It has just epidemiological cooking the books. It's got nothing specific and actual. It not only massively overcounted, that it counted at all as a fraud. And so they get you to buy the, well, we'll suggest, as I was listening, BTWRLM416, I said, well, they offer you, you can get the two-shot or you can get the one-shot. There was no-shot choice. That's just a sales technique. So they tell you, oh, they massively overcounted. No, any counting was a fraud. I just sit here, folks, thinking about this. Do people appreciate what they're hearing enough to do something about it? It's all right here. This fraud is just laid open for us. All this wouldn't even be part of your letter. I'm just pointing it out. You can prove, when you know there's no test since last March, and they start talking about counts and cases, that's a fraud. When you go in your statutes and you find out what a case actually is, and they haven't done those steps, and they're saying there's a case, you know, that's a fraud. It's really an easy statement. But for you, they don't have the first step and the last step. And that's really, in a way, all you're really looking for the most basic intention to present against a presumption of your risk. They presume you to be a risk, and you need to eliminate that. COVID-19 FDA set to grant full approval of the Pfizer vaccine without public discussion or data was a story that's already been fulfilled. I just wanted to throw this out here. The point is, I've told you they have administrative processes. This one, obviously, they didn't allow the public discussion. I don't know why a bunch of lawsuits didn't go to shut this down, because they didn't have those public discussions in the APA, federal APA requirements. But this is how fast this was being pushed through. The FDA approves this thing called Comirnaty, a name they've made up, the first COVID-19 vaccine approved by the agency and the first COVID vaccine brand name approved in the U.S. And I need you to read this story very, very, very carefully, because they don't say they're approving this vaccine. They say they're approving the use of the name, and the name is called brand name. And the other thing about this Comirnaty, it's a combination. They actually explain it in their own words. They explain what it is. Pfizer, BioNTech, Comirnaty. It's called the vaccine's called Comirnaty in Europe. This starts to lead us down a problem. They approve something that's been tested in Europe, not the United States. It is, in their own documents, legally distinct from the thing that they are doing that they approved for emergency. You have to read these stories very carefully to understand what some people are now bringing up, a bait and switch. Another link, a couple of links here. FDA approves first COVID-19 vaccine. Do they really? They explain the name. They explain what it's supposed to do. It's nonsense what they're trying to do to get you all warm and fuzzy. But they actually explain in these documents that this was not just an approval like they want to spend. that they want to say. It's a license. It's a biologics license that was started by a biologics license application. I had to go and verify that by this special, finding this link to show you this is not just an approval. The FDA wants to just say it's approved, approved, approved. It is literally a license. This gets us to another point to discuss. Moving before that, we do get to the point that it was in the European Union that this vaccine isn't even available to the United States. Likely, and some people are theorizing, because of the liability to the company, because it's not under any protection for the time being. You're likely not going to see this. What they did do is they said the existing experimental one, if we go to go and say this one of the ones licensed to be experimental, the existing one, they can use out their stocks. It's like it. It's just the same, just legally different. You want to trust all that? All you got to do is copy and paste these words together for yourself in a short list. The FDA gives full approval to COVID-19 vaccines. No public hearing, no transparency, no open review of vaccine data as discussed by John Rappaport. He has his take on it. I agree. You need to read it, see what it's talking about. He goes through how this thing is working. They talk about transparency, but I don't think, like novel, I don't think people understand that transparency is the agents of destruction hope you don't see them, that they are, what they're doing is transparent to you. And the procedures that are required make that less transparent seeing through, because then they have to put their cards on a literal table that someone can start checking out. Did they meet all the mandates that the legislature put on them? In this case, through the ADA. So I say I don't understand why this is such a big problem to stop this. New data on COVID-19 transmissions by vaccinated individuals says this thing cannot be a vaccine. It is doing what we've been telling. I'm having to read real fast here these points, and we can't touch them. All this stuff is saying you don't have the mitigation measure called a vaccine that they just approved. That is actually not the thing that they're approving. And I'll throw in the question, are these things bait and switch? Are device manufacturers playing bait and switch with the FDA? Is not a new question. It's been put out in 2015. These companies are known to do this. The FDA is known to agree to it. So we can get all the things that we need, all the evidence we need to show what's going on is just a route. It's a all for money, has nothing to do with health, has to do with the profit, an investment of a lifetime that none of you are in on except for the exploitation side. That this was seen coming in, and this is how it was going to be done, was available to us back in 2020. And I have so many more. I'm like really a tab overachiever anymore. I can't even get close to all of it. Even Moderna stops in here. They're going to gum up. They're going to try and get theirs done, even though there's evidence of 300,000 injuries. On and on. License. I guess I should have wanted to get to this. A special permission to do something on or with someone else's property, which were it not for the license, could be legally prevented or give rise to legal action in tort or trespass. A license is simply authority or permission to do what is otherwise wrongful or illegal, and in ordinary usage, it extends to the document certifying or recording that appropriate permission has been given by a competent authority. Wrongful or illegal against you, the CDC does not have authority to do, and yet they're doing it, and you're allowing it. Grimner, hope you get better. Keep it up. I know it's slow. Appreciate it. All the syndicators, thank you for what help you do. Everybody sending out the word behind the woodshed to other people to fortify themselves, to a man or woman, be the backlash for it. I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature will.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
that's what opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.